Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 100 Years, 100 Movies. Today's day 22 of the Season of the Witch. And today, we're talking about a more supernatural subject than we have had before. I've touched upon the supernatural here and there, but I haven't really dedicated a full-fledged episode to something supernatural. That's not to say that I'm just lumping in the supernatural together, because the supernatural, the paranormal, the extra normal, whatever you want to call it, is all encompassing. I think that it's part of the charm and of these type of movies. What I'm talking specifically about today is haunted houses. Now, I've probably mentioned some of the greatest haunted house movies ever made in the past, such as The Shining and The Haunting, Paranormal Activity. I mean, I don't want to say it was the greatest ever made, but definitely a great haunted house movie, Evil Dead. And even something like Alien, which you wouldn't necessarily think of as being a haunted house, but the way that it plays out, you can definitely make that argument. As I was mentioning, the haunted houses are an entryway into the paranormal, into the supernatural, and I think that's part of the appeal of them. It's the fact that we're dealing with these forces that we don't really understand, and they're invading us in our own homes. Now, I think when most people think about haunted houses, they might think of, you know, The Shining or something like The Haunting, but people from my generation, at least, probably think about 1982's Poltergeist, directed by Toby Hooper, written and produced by Steven Spielberg, thinking of Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think I just smushed Steven Spielberg and Joe Beth Williams into one person, unfortunately. In any case, Poltergeist is a great horror movie, one that really kind of shows what Toby Hooper can do, one that's a bit more serious than some of his other horror movies. And because Spielberg's, you know, the person that was there producing, one that many people think that he ghost directed, who knows? I mean, Spielberg definitely has a certain voice, and there are a lot of those touches in Poltergeist. The movie Poltergeist also is one of a few cursed films, quote-unquote cursed, in that two of the main actresses were killed, unfortunately, or died, I should say, soon after the, or not necessarily soon after, but within a few years of the movie coming out. And they were both tragedies. I mean, one was killed by her boyfriend, and I want to say that was Beatrice I don't remember her name, as fucked up as it sounds, but Dominique Dunn, unfortunately, was killed at the ripe old age of 22 by her boyfriend. And also Heather O'Rourke at 12 died of stenosis. So this movie kind of has that morbid connection to it as well, which for some people, it makes it fascinating to them. But the movie itself, even without that, is great. And I think part of the reason that people really enjoy this movie is because even though we're following this family that's being tormented by these ghosts, and, you know, these pranks at first aren't, you know, it's like messing with chairs and stuff like that, where it's like, oh shit, you know, and it escalates to the point that like Heather O'Rourke's Carol Ann gets sucked in to a portal in a television. But I think part of the appeal is that a lot of the things that the ghosts do really kind of mirror what you would expect in a haunted house at a county fair or at an amusement park. You know, there's a scene of the guy who notices that he's bleeding and starts to tear at his face and ends up removing all the skin on his face. There's the creepy clown puppet that maybe that ends up attacking the children. There's the trees that try to attack people. And, you know, then once we get to why this is all happening, the fact that the house was built on a sacred Indian burial plot. They never moved the bodies, and these are restless spirits that are basically getting their revenge. We also get the sequence of people getting attacked by by skeletons in a pool that's being submerged in water. And it really kind of reminds you of like Indiana Jones. I guess what I'm trying to say is that even though this movie has frightening elements and definitely has a lot of horror elements, it's kind of a fun movie. And I feel that that's part of the reason that it just kind of hit. The notoriety of having two young actresses in the movie, you know, dying doesn't help. I mean, doesn't hurt, but definitely I think that's part of the reason that people really enjoy this movie and really go back to it. And I think you can really see that in something like, well, in the remake of Poltergeist, which was unnecessary and not as good. And if I remember correctly, there's even a sequel that no one really talks about. They just talk about that first movie. It just really, really hit. I think the other movie that people think about when they think about haunted house movies is The Amityville Horror from 1979, directed by Stuart Rosenberg and starring James Brolin and Margot Kidder and Rod Steiger. I wouldn't say that this movie is necessarily good. I mean, it's watchable, but I think part of the appeal of this movie was that it was quote-unquote based on true events. In this movie, we follow the Lutz family as they buy a house, even though they are told about the sort of past of the home, because, hey, it's a really nice house, and fuck that supernatural shit. We don't believe in it. And then once things start really happening in the home, at that point, there's a point of no return. I mean, they're able to escape. Nothing happens to them, but yeah, I mean, we have this movie that just kind of hit their cultural zeitgeist at the time and has kind of stuck with it. I mean, this movie has had, plenty of sequels. And I think I knew about those sequels, like some of the later shitty sequels, before I had even realized that this movie was from 79. But people just, it really appealed to them, even if it wasn't that great. I think sometimes when you see that with horror movies, the based on a true story or based on true events, it adds a whole other layer because you're curious as to what that really means. Even though, as to the veracity of the claims of the people that behind the Amityville Horror, I mean, who knows? It's people have thoroughly questioned and tried to debunk these claims, but I mean, it's a movie. As far as the movie's concerned, it makes for a decent movie and one that's definitely memorable. Now, I think one of the things about haunted house movies is that the idea is malleable as well, since we're talking about a home that has a spirit or that has spirits trapped inside it and things happen. So why not maybe look at it from the point of view of the spirits as well? Which is to say, I'm talking about The Others from 2001, directed by Alejandro Amenábar, who wrote such great movies as Thesis and Abre tus Ojos, working alongside Pedro Almodóvar. Anyway, The Others is really striking. It's presented as almost this, like the way it's presented, and I kind of gave away the twist by saying that they're dead the whole time, because you don't actually know that that's like the third act twist. Oh, spoilers, I guess, of this movie. But it's a great twist. We basically follow this family, a matriarch, Grace, played by Nicole Kidman, and her two children, who are allergic to sunlight, as they await the return of their father to from World War II. And as time passes, there's some interesting events in the home. And I think the great thing about this is that we kind of play with this whole idea of this house is haunted, and the main characters that we follow the whole time are reacting to this house being haunted. But once you get that twist that they're actually the spirits, and there's people in the home who are trying to communicate with them, and we see those interactions kind of flipped, and it's, even if you know that twist, I think it makes for an interesting movie, because it's just a completely different perspective than what you regularly get in this type of movie. And on top of it, you know, you get this wonderful performance from Nicole Kidman, which she's, not that she's alone the whole time in the movie or anything like that, but she's just a tour de force. She's literally the main character of the movie. And speaking of the point of view of the ghosts themselves, Another movie that kind of took that idea and not so much, I guess, not as direct as the others is 1980's The Changeling, directed by Peter Medak, based on a story by Russell Hunter. This stars George C. Scott, and we basically follow George C. Scott, who is a widowed man who moves into this house, and as time passes, there starts to be some incidents in the home, and he realizes that while he might be alone, while he may be the only living person in that home, he's not alone. And the great thing about this movie is that we end up almost having this, yes, there's a ghost, and yes, we have supernatural elements, and we have all that, but it's almost like this mystery as to why this ghost is trying to communicate with George C. Scott, or why it's trying to, what it's trying to get across, because it's not like it's trying to hurt him necessarily or trying to kick him out of the house, but there's definitely something there. And due to that, George C. Scott is able to basically find out what had happened to this young boy and the tragedy that befell him as well. And part of that connection might be because when George C. Scott lost his wife, he also lost his daughter. It was in a car accident. And maybe it's almost this connection between these two characters of someone who has lost everything and someone who has had everything taken from them. Because this presence that he feels, this boy was killed by his father, drowned. And, you know, this movie, it's rough when you think about it that way and the emotional weight of what's going on. And much like in the others, you know, we follow George C. Scott for the majority of the movie. Sometimes it's just him, you know, reacting to kind of what's going on in the house. And it's great, you know, I wouldn't say it's necessarily fun, but it's definitely a very entertaining movie, and it's worth worth your time to check it out. I know that The Changeling is a pretty well-known movie, but I feel like it's kind of fallen out of, not favor, but people don't really think about it as much. And this is The Changeling, not Changeling, the Angelina Jolie movie, which is pretty good, but it's not, definitely not about him. There are missing children in that movie, but there aren't any hauntings or anything like that. So if you pop that in, you'd probably be like, what the fuck is this? If you're expecting a haunted house movie. But as I've mentioned, you know, haunted house movies aren't something that's started in the 80s. They've been around since the beginning of horror. I mean, you can probably, to a certain extent, argue that something like The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, in a way, is a haunted house movie, even though there isn't a ghost, but there definitely is the influence of this person in this home. And we have literal haunted house movies as well since that time. And one of the ones that I didn't really talk about before is William Castle's House on Haunted Hill, starring Vincent Price, who is priceless in this movie. Sorry about that. I actually can't believe I've gone this far without making that stupid joke. But House on Haunted Hill, we follow this eccentric millionaire played by Vincent Price, who has invites some people to his home, to this castle in Los Angeles, and basically tells them that whoever agrees to stay in the home overnight with him and his wife and survives gets $10,000. We then have this almost like cat and mouse game of survival throughout the house as voices and odd incidents occur, and we end up finding out that the people themselves are probably more dangerous than whatever spirits are trapped in the home. House on Haunted Hill is just, it's a fun movie. There's a big climax having to do with Vincent Price controlling a skeleton, and William Castle being someone who would try any kind of gimmick to get people to watch movies, would, in the 50s when this came out, would have theater owners rig up like a skeleton done up in glow-in-the-dark paint so that it could fly overhead over people's heads and scare them in the middle of the showing. I believe he also, in this movie, offered a life insurance policy for anyone that died from watching it. Now, is this movie scary enough to kill anybody? No. Was it scary enough to kill anybody in 1959? Probably not. But, I mean, that's quite the hook. I mean, hey, this movie might be so scary that you might die. And if you do, well, at least your family gets some money, right? Now, this is the 1959 version. There was a remake in the 1990s, which is not good, much like The Haunting that I had talked about before. With that, the remake in the 90s, those are both shit. Don't bother with either one of them. Stick with the originals. And speaking of the 90s, one of my favorite Haunted House movies of that time is Stir of Echoes, which liberally used Painted Black by the Rolling Stones. Although, if I remember correctly, it was the cover, it wasn't the original. And being a huge fan of the Rolling Stones, I love that. But we basically, in this movie, have a man who gets hypnotized, played by Kevin Bacon, who ends up seeing visions of a girl's ghost. And much like in The Changeling, ends up trying to figure out what happened to this poor girl. As I said, once again, set to Painted Black. I remember really enjoying this movie when it came out in 99. I've never gone back and rewatched it, but it made an impression to a certain extent where I still think of it, and that's got to count for something. But like I said, I remember really enjoying it. Now, one of the really cool things about Haunted House movies is that this idea of Haunted House goes back to like Gothic horror, and probably before that, but in its heyday, really, yeah, kind of to Gothic horror, to stuff like, and not there's necessarily ghosts in it, but like Rebecca or Wuthering Heights. I'm blanking on the names of Gothic horror movies, the stuff by the writings of Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, you can probably make an argument for some of the seminal classics, like, you know, Dracula, that has some Gothic horror elements, Picture of Dorian Gray, one of my favorite books. These all have Gothic horror elements, and one of those elements is basically, like, not necessarily ghosts, but unrequited love, or, and it may be related to ghosts, or it may be manifested as ghosts, you know? And one of those one of the recent movies that really kind of captured that feel is Guillermo del Toro's Crimson Peak, because I can't go a couple of episodes without mentioning del Toro, because I love his work. Crimson Peak isn't necessarily his best movie, but it's a very different movie from the ones that he's done before. Guillermo del Toro himself actually said that when he made Pacific Rim for his inner 13-year-old boy, and that he made Crimson Peak for his inner 13-year-old girl. And yeah, I mean, it's a del Toro movie, so there's these really interesting, horrific-looking apparitions that haunt Mia Wasikowska, who is the main character of the movie, who plays Edith Cushing, who is married to Tom Hiddleston's Thomas Sharp. And they end up moving into this home, into their ancestral home called Crimson Peak, because of the makeup of the clay and dirt in the land that makes it look almost red, and it's on a mountain. So we have this really just interesting looking house, which, you know, for a haunted house movie, might as well have a very interesting house. I mean, that really was part of the appeal of the Amityville Horror, is we had this kind of rustic looking house. And even in stuff like in The Conjuring, you know, the house ends up becoming kind of its own character. But this is also just a tour de force for Jessica Chastain as, excuse me, Lucille Sharp, who is basically like the main villain of the movie. Crimson Peak is fun. Like I said, it's not the best del Toro, but I like highlighting it just because I enjoyed it. And I mean, it's probably the only movie that I can ever think of where Jessica Chastain and Tom Hiddleston play possibly incestuous siblings. And where Tom Hiddleston, who, you know, I think most people, when they think of Tom Hiddleston, think of, you know, Loki, is not the biggest scumbag in the movie. So Crimson Peak is definitely a lot of fun. Probably one of the more famous recent movies having to do with haunted houses over the last 10 years is Insidious, directed by James Wan, written by Lee Whannell, of course, of Saw fame, and produced, along with them and some others, by Oren Peli of Paranormal Activity. So we have this great horror pedigree for this particular movie. And we also got Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne. Patrick Wilson, who, of course, is also in the Conjuring movies that started coming out a few years after this. In this movie, we have a young boy who gets possessed. He falls into a coma, and he can see, like, the afterlife, and he's taken over in the afterlife, he's hiding from this demonic entity that's trying to get him in order to escape into our reality. Insidious was ended up being this pretty popular movie, popular enough to actually spawn a franchise that I'm not super familiar with. I've seen the first one, but that's about it. I enjoyed it. I just never really got around to watching the other ones. But once again, I think it's a different take on a haunted house, because even in the trailer, this tells you that this house isn't haunted. Your boy is haunted. So basically, even if they leave the house, it was that entity is still going to continue following this young boy. Much like Katie in the Paranormal Activity movies, where it's mentioned that these incidents have ever happened. And as you progress through those movies, you get more backstory and you get to find out why that is. Now, most of these movies, or all these movies that I've mentioned, basically talk about haunted houses in the sense of a spirit that's stuck in this home. Because even in the House on Haunted Hill, it's implied that there's actual spirits in there that are tormenting the people inside, or that are being tormented by the people inside, depending on the movie, or that are trying to get the intention of the living. But that's not to say that this is really the only take on haunted houses. And I kind of wanted to wrap up with a different take. And that is actual, you know, attraction haunted houses. Haunted houses are a huge thing, especially around Halloween. And with this being Halloween time, I think there's no better way than to finish up with talking about the slasher Hellfest and, well, the basically another slasher, Haunt. Both Hellfest and Haunt revolve around a group of friends who end up at a haunted house, like attraction. So in Hellfest, which came out in 2018, we follow this group of people who are going through an amusement park and going onto these rides. Unbeknownst to them, they're being stalked by this masked serial killer who, in this horror-themed park, is basically killing them as they go through the mazes in these haunted houses, and haunted houses being that these are attractions. This, to me, was a really interesting take, a somewhat different take on that idea of a haunted house, and one that, at least for me, was made even better with 2019's Haunt. In Haunt, we have this group who go to an extreme haunted house. So in the beginning of this movie, we end up, like, because Hellfest, we really spend probably more, as much time with the killer, probably more so with the killer than we do with the kids. In Haunt, we kind of get to know this group of college friends. They end up finding this, getting lost and end up finding this extreme haunted house and decide why the fuck not. And this is the kind of extreme haunted house where you have to sign waivers before you enter, and they take your cell phones. And they think it's all part of the fun, and they don't realize that they're an actual torture house, and the people there are trying to kill them. And this movie's clever because it kind of fucks with you, because even as things progress, they still kind of have this whole idea of like, oh, I just work here, man. Like, I didn't know this was going on, and everyone's in on it. It's a fun movie, and it has this like gotcha ending where the tables are turned on the people running this haunted house, which, you know, the group of teens that were following end up destroying it, but one of them escapes, and at the end of the movie he gets killed himself by the girl who escapes, in kind of a nod to throwback, you know, revenge movies and things like that. Haunt's a lot of fun, and I think overall, I mean, like I mentioned, you know, I think a lot of the appeal of haunted house movies, or the majority of these haunted house movies, is that in dealing with the supernatural, we're dealing with something that we don't understand fully, you know, and maybe it's all bullshit, but maybe it's not. And I think it preys on our fears of what if what comes after death is even worse than being alive, because it's inevitable. We're all going to die. And that fear of what's to come, whether it be another life, nothing, being stuck in someone's house for the rest of eternity, that's where a lot of the horror comes from in these movies and these ideas of what a haunting really means. I think it's the ambiguity of it and the unknown. And in general, I think that's the appeal of supernatural movies. But in particular, It's when those ideas start to infringe upon or come into our homes, which most of us, whether we live in a studio apartment or in a ranch style house, we see it as our own personal space. And to have somebody invade that is horrific. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow.